Howard, is turn time true and simple second driver?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is. He ran a 67 in the Keeneland Breeders' Cup. That was a very slow race. Very, very slow, and running slow time, and that's a deviant race, just not the way he usually runs. He still made his move on the turn, though, but the turn time itself was so slow that even making the move, his time was slow. But he made the move even in that race. You see, he gained between the first and the second fraction. Mr. Brohammer, you have a question, sir?
Yeah, I'd like to contribute to Spencer.
All right.
The invariably, the past performances on the horse are going to tell you what, whether the horse is going to be able to press or be. If the pace is, if it's a kind of press that has to be snugged up against the leaders to run his best race, and your numbers say that he's not going to be snugged up against the leaders here, then he turns into a closer, right? And a closer is not a presser. 99 out of 100 times you can get that from the charts. If he has to be snugged up against that pace, and that pace is quicker than that, you just turn him into a closer, which he's not. And that will tell you virtually every time. Yep. Follow what I'm saying?
Look at the times he ran against. He runs the same way against the 112 and horse as the 110 and 1. So he's a presser.
It relates to the pacing. That's setting up a today's race.
Yeah, some pressers want to be a length back or right. Literally lapped on the leaders, right? And it's lapped on the leaders in a 45 might be comfortable, but if the leader's going 44 and 2, he's no longer capable of running his best race. And you'll see races where all of a sudden he's three back at the half instead of right up against them. And if he falls back off of that or doesn't wind up running into the race, then you know that he's wrong for this race. If, on the other hand, he can come from three back, then he's just a presser period. You've got a good play. But some of them have to be in a certain place on the turn to be able to run their best race.
Yes, sir.
On page 12 in that chart that he's got up there, I'm not quite sure if I understand, but, you know, his ESP type. In that first race, he's got the horse, you know, beaten three lengths.
Distributing his energy by those races. He's mostly sustained. He's a sustained-based presser by nature. When he runs early, it has to do with his distribution of energy. But that is a kind of a designation that is not determined by the way we would, if you were writing your own ESPs
all
up
right
here.
Okay, because I didn't seem to figure it.
But essentially, that's the kind of a horse it is. He ran early twice in his life, and he ran. And the computer doesn't come up with the same distinction you can, like I want. Nothing a computer that you can't do better. But it gives you a ballpark energy concept of his style of running, okay. Not where he is in relation to the race.
In that one, you can see that he's got two races where he's over 68 median energy.
Right.
That's when it calls him early. The computer's just doing that.
Yeah.
Well, in his case, you're mixing turf with dirt. That's why you're a better judge of what he actually is than that guy. The computer doesn't know the difference.
Right. I've got it. Turf and dirt, I can see it. Like
right. You're the best judge of how we run.
One step that I didn't hear you mention that I would have guessed would be included in the stable frame was after each of 10, would you want to run a deceleration chart on each of its tire pattern forms?
If you had it, I would keep my, your axis, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, I would keep, look at his axis and see. That's the whole idea. What you're looking for is, supposing you have a horse who's a presser, but always slants here. Now the next race, you see he's slanting a little less here, and he's starting to come up, and you chart his form cycle that way. When you find out that he's going to run against the third fraction, where that slant will be look more like this, that's where you enter the horse, when he's got a third fraction. This is where he's deficient, the third fraction. Find a third fraction he's going to run against today where he'll not be deficient, where what he usually runs when he's in condition is going to just place him, just like you own the horse, you train the horse. You place him. By that, you bet him. You can't place him in the race, the other guy's got to do it, but you can say, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't place him in this race at all, Betty, today. But when you see he's tailor-made for this, if you've got one that always does this, you got half the battle won. If you got one that runs like this, you're early when you've got to wait for a circumstance when you know that this horse is not going to be headed here or here, or it's not going to be severely challenged, or you can get away with it. And your sustained horse, you really wait not for a slow pace. Too many people think of sustained as being good against a slow pace. That's not true. Early is best against a slow pace. Sustained works best when the early runs so early that they all die. So think in terms of 100% opposite of the way the public thinks, and you'll be a part of the 99%, not the 1%. Or you'll be the part of the 1%. Get it sooner or later. But you see what I mean? You place it when you see where it's deficient, or why it lost last time, where it was deficient. When that deficiency is overcome by the day's pace that you project. And projecting today's pace is the biggest, most important step. How many of you will be able to do that now? Who've been practicing projecting pace? He does it great. Women seem to do this better than men. I had a woman here the other day from Santa Barbara who gets it within a fifth and sometimes right on just about every race. Are you practicing that? Projecting today's, what you think today's pace of the race will be? Most people, I'll give you a little tip. Michael Pozzola said it, but I'll say it again. It's better to predict slow than fast. If you're off on the slow side, you're much better apt to win more races than predicting the race is running too fast. See, what you've got to remember is if you're predicting a 45-1 and a 110-1, or a 110-3, let's say, you're predicting a 25-2 third fraction. So always deduct your two projections, one from the other, to see what you project the third fraction to be. That's the one area where people don't project. They say, well, this horse can run a 110-3. He's in there, and he blows on a, he's in the ballpark against a 45-1. If that's your pace, then this is your third fraction pace. Now, suddenly you find out that this horse that runs a 44-4 and a 110-1 doesn't make it, then you've got a whole different ballgame. So watch out, project a little slower, preferably to projecting it too fast, and always then derive your third fraction project hit. Any questions on this so far?
Yeah, Doc, on page 12.
Uh-huh.
Right in the middle of the page. It's referring to Tri's turn time. It says it's truly outstanding with this, once you throw out the batteries of Keeneland. It represents the second fraction velocity of, 23-3. And then the next phrase is what gets going a mile and a quarter. Tri's turn time was only slowed by 1.5 fifths. Here are the figures. Where did this 1.5 fifths show in these figures down here?
Well, he usually runs in 23-3, and he ran in 24.
That's 23.5 fifths. All right, I get you.
His turn time was 24 in the big cat.
We wanted to rate his hidden energies, and we'd add the 24 to 23.4.
No. Even going longer, in the big cat, if you wanted his hidden energy, 24 and 23.4,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
Or 20. It's a mile and a quarter, so relative to what? Relative to a mile and a quarter, it would be 23.4 and 25.1. But we're not going to be running mile and a quarter races for up. So think in terms of what his turn time would be in a regular distance.
A more normal route.
Yeah. But don't make up, you're making trouble for yourself there.
Why do you say that?
Because this is how he ran a bit mile and a quarter race. You don't give it. All you ought to say is that the horse only slowed down very slightly in his turn time when he went that classic distance. And this is not really relevant. What a horse does in a you know, any race over mile 316 is not, should not concern you, because that race was won purely on strategy. Somebody says, get out there and run the fastest you can, as long as you can, and we'll bury this, these favorites, and maybe we'll be able to steal the race. Whenever you run against a class horse at a classic distance, like a mile and a quarter, there's two ways to go. Run your race, or try to steal it. Now, Lucas has been trying to steal the Derby for many years, and he finally got one. Usually, you can't steal a mile and a quarter race unless you've got one heck of a lot of stamina. But look what kind of stamina the pace of the race, both tri-team tri and martial law ended up showing. The best third fraction that the other horse can run was, what, 23 and 4 or something like that? These horses ran it in 25 and 1. The winner ran it in 25 and 1. Which is 7/5 slower than Nasser El Arab's best third fraction. Roughly. Don't get excited about it. This is not a world-shaking bit of news. But that horse was 9 lengths off the second call. Nasser El Arab was. So the fact that he could run 7/5 faster than they could in the final fraction didn't do him any good. It's not a big point, Jay. It's not something. It's just the fact that he was too far behind, and they didn't peter out that badly. They ran a 25. The winner ran a 25-1. And Nasser can run. His best day was at 23-4, and he averages about 24-1. So he was only 5 lengths. He only gained 5 lengths on the best. And he was more than 5 lengths off at the second call. He was 9 something off. That's the case of early stealing a race. So, getting $3,717 from Tom's horses to watch it. Tom saw those horses could do that. He had the place horse himself. In all fairness, Tom, who's going to suspect that a horse with won a Lance victory is going to go into a $1 million race and win it? Except for the people who, they didn't know about that sort of thing. What the hell? It's on his list. I trust Tom. Put the money down, and there you go.
We should have done that.
Well, he had wait till Monday. I bet wait till Monday. I didn't know he had it on his list, but I bet he didn't. Bet. Well, you did. Oh, you did that. All your friends didn't, though. They said he was going in over his head. Yeah. Tom bet wait till Monday, and he could have just as easily bet this one. What's for a few dollars more?
Now, I got $29.60 to place. Normally, when I don't get the place price, he's ragging me about that.
You're going to win here. Oh, no, I just want to.
Who is that?
Jim Schmidt. He likes to see somebody else get drunk.
Somebody says, what's a Schmidt?
What's a Schmidt? Tom, before you, I've already talked about, Tom, you don't have to tell him anything about your third fraction.
Yes, sir.
You don't have to say anything about the third fraction chart. I've already told him that just to change the 25, and we'll give him the, because we're going to have to juggle the numbers, so they won't be even, so.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell him about that. Okay. It's already done while you were resting. Are there any questions on this? This way to pick, choose a stable. I will tell you something, it's dynamite. And, how do I know? And Jimmy Bradshaw in Tulsa, they didn't have any racing in Arizona, in Oklahoma, except Blue Ribbon Downs, and that was only the last 3 years. And then Remington Downs. Both of us would keep a, use this procedure to develop a stable so that when he would go down, he had to go all the way to Oakland or Louisiana Downs or fly out here to Vegas or something. Couldn't go, he didn't have the luxury of being able to go to the track. Now that I'm sitting 89 miles from the nearest track, there's no San Bernardino, no Indio. And I don't want to just get in the car and go to, down to L.A. because I can't just go for one day like you people. I've got to stay overnight and get absorb the atmosphere. So if I go on a Wednesday and I look at the card and there's no money to be made on it, or I just don't feel comfortable with it, I've blown 2 hours. Jimmy's going to Oakland. He's flying with a drunken pilot or driving his pickup truck or gunning out in the back of it. That's a long way to go if you have no idea of what's happening or what the card's going to be. So we started keeping this particular procedure with the old graph, not the new one. And when we saw some of our horses being entered, we would then go the various distances we had to go to wager on them. And that made it well worthwhile. I had a stable of 20 horses at one. And it included some great horses. And when they started winning and started paying $320, I sold them. I never had to feed them. Didn't have to pay the trainer. Didn't have to clean up after them.
Were you doing a shovel?
No shovel. No. And it was very profitable. And I could put in all that extra time that it takes to really pinpoint when a horse is properly placed. So I would suggest that you keep a stable and wager on the way you're doing now. Go when you can and wager. But then on the stable, you can plunge good sums of money. Because supposing you guess wrong or you placed it wrong and doesn't win this time, you still own the horse and you can recoup the next time. And you know pretty well when it's going to show place and win, too. As opposed to just betting it to win, you say, hey, this is where it's going to pick up the pieces and do no worse than come in third. Or this today, I'm going to key it as the horse that can't come in worse than second in the exacta. You put it in with several horses that come up good on your computer that day. But you can really make yourself a nucleus of a good living, even though you can't go to the track on a regular basis. And even though you hesitate to put larger sums on a horse you just handicapped that day, so you want to pay $5 and $10 on your regular play, you can go your $20 to $100, whatever your traffic will bear on these, if you understand how you chart them. And you'll find that when you do it, and I've had people like Jay Elliott, for instance, and like Joe Bolger, and like Spencer Toner, who do this religiously. And we used to make fun of them before because they never got to the track to make a bet. They were so busy charting. But now they have the best of all worlds. They can go to the track and bet $5 and $10 for recreation and make $20-$30 a day. They can go and plunge on these and make a good monthly income because they're sure that security that charting these horses and knowing when they're properly placed will give you is the difference between recreationally making a few bucks and making a good living. Some people don't need to do that. Some people have just like Marion. He sees these things, these patterns. Tom, of course, sees these patterns. He doesn't have to go through this work. Dick Schmidt apparently sees them. He does tremendously well. Which makes me so glad that he finally has found something he can do well. He really does. Dick Schmidt is an outstanding handicapper. His daily income is tremendous, and his confidence level and his ability to maintain stability in the face of disaster. Lost his job, had a baby, moved and couldn't find his new house. So there are no...
What kinds of horses to put in? What
kind? 10,000 climbers, and I'll put them. Oh, I wouldn't care. Yeah, it's the other way around. Whatever you're thinking, it's the other way around. Don't put in Wayne Lucas, Whittingham horses, or horses that you know are going to, they're going to get the best jockeys because they come from the best stables. Because the public, when those horses are properly placed, they're going to be spotted by the public because they're going to get publicity. And whenever you see Pinky or McCarran or somebody on the horse, whoever's hot now, people bet it more than it should be bet anyway. Find a trainer that everyone says, just get Greg Lawler's trainer's list. Take the top, the bottom 10. The worse they are, according to public opinion or prejudice opinion, because they're going to get better. I mean, Cutlass Reality was a bum, $10,000, you know, claimer, and all of a sudden he's the biggest stakes horse of the year. So all these horses are bums once. But the idea is to get the bummiest of the bums so that when you're on them, they'll pay big money. And sooner or later, if the glue factory doesn't get them first, every horse is going to win something. They're going to place it where it can win. You'll be there because you know this horse. You know it like you know your wife. If you know your, you know, some people don't never know their wife. But assuming that you don't understand your wife, you understand these horses that way. And you understand that, let's use children, because people, you love your children irrespective of them.
You ever see my wife, Rob?
I've seen her swim. But you get to know them. You know when a kid looks at you, that he's lying or he looks this way or what, and you get to know this horse. You say, this horse can run here. And say, if you're only right half the time when you're following one horse, you know, you're not betting two horses here, you're betting your horse. And you don't have to bet him to win. You can say, this is where he should be in the money. This is where I eat. So you follow that one horse. You got all those computer programs you can run him through. That doesn't mean you stop your other play. It doesn't mean you stop anything else. It means that this gives you an extra edge. That's what I would suggest. Don't get horses that everybody else is going to be betting, because you're going to get $4 mutuals. Where's the point of that? Don't bet the big name horses or some horse you read about just sold the yearling sale for $5 million or something. Get some claimer. Follow, that's where you want. Get him from the claiming ranks. He'll go to the allowance ranks soon enough, and you want to dump him when he gets paid $420. Get four pressers. Three early and three closers. Or you might say, heck with the closers, I don't want to wait for them. Two closers, five pressers, and three. But don't get more than three early, because otherwise, your early is not going to pay you as much money. You just want to own a few, so when they're going to win, Any other questions?
Yeah, Dr. Lee regrets for a minute. And I've heard it said again and again, it slips my mind about keying a horse in an exacta. Say 5 minutes ago, you were making reference to it. You said when you get a horse that you know is going to run no worse than second, key in exacta. I guess this keeps me, how to betting, how do you key?
Well, there are certain horses that you think should win the race, but they don't. They come in second, because a lot of things can make a horse come in second when he should come in first. About 26% of the time, the horse that should come in first comes in second. But the other 74% of the time is because he's a designated, can't do worse than second horse. He just has that particular quality that you will ascertain if you do this, or you can ascertain now by the 55% solution concepts. Can't do worse than place today. So now you put him, if you know he can't do worse than place, you can wheel him with four horses who might win.
On the bottom.
Don't put him on the bottom. That'll kill you too, because he might win. But instead of saying, I need three horses, I know this one's my key, he can't do worse than place. Now you can get in it for $30, you got 10, 10, and 10, you can put him with three other horses instead of two.
I understand.
So what you're saying is, I'm banking this horse will not come in worse than second. Therefore, I can extend my win end of the exact to the horses that I can put him with. Baseball, it's not a baseball, it's a key box, so to speak.
Thank you.
And in Vegas, where you can play Quinella's, if you got one like that, you can put him with four or five horses. Five horses for $10. Four horses for $8, instead of paying $6 for three for round robin, or any portion magnified of that.